second case of the day, Rooney v. Pfizer. Mr. Schneider?
May it please the Court, my name is Dan Schneider. I represent plaintiff and appellant Mitch Rooney. This is an action under Section 1983. The defendant appellee is Brad Beiser, who's a game warden employed by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. The case arises from an encounter between these two men during the Wisconsin deer gun season. Mr. Beiser was working in his capacity as a warden. Mr. Rooney was at a deer registration station to register some deer his party had shot and to pick up some permits.
So here's what I want to explore with you, Mr. Schneider. That is the record about the initiation of this encounter between the two men. I'm looking at the district court judge's opinion, and you know, she notes that there are a lot of disputes about the altercation. And at the bottom of page 4 of her opinion, she says, according to plaintiff, he said to defendant, Brad, get off the trailer and let me get through, quote, and then plaintiff, quote, brushed between defendant and the trailers. There are two aspects of that that I just want to get a sense of how clear the record is. The first is the use of the word said. What you see in the district court's opinion, and you certainly see in the state's brief, is the translation of the word said to be loud somehow, shouting, yelling, loud and disrespectful, whatever synonyms you want for loud. And I want to know, what is the record? Does the plaintiff just say, I said to him, or does the plaintiff say, I said in a conversational tone at any point, or what can you tell me about that word said?
I think the record is, Your Honor, that Mr. Rooney testified that he said to Brad Beiser, Brad, get off the trailer, let me through. The words that the district court used were loud and confrontational. The district court placed some emphasis on the word confrontational. As we point out in the brief, we believe that's not supported by the record. There was a co-worker of Brad Beiser on that trailer against which Mr. Beiser was leaning, a man named Chris Sand. Mr. Sand put in an affidavit on this motion for summary judgment. He described the initial remarks made as being, quote, good-natured, which I submit is the opposite of confrontational.
Well, see, that's what I'm worried about. If we're going to decide this without a trial, we have to take the facts in the light most favorable to your client.
Correct.
And there's a mention, I'm not seeing the page right offhand, but there's a mention in the state's brief that that this point was made before the district court, namely that it was just a statement, you know, said, but that the district court thought that there wasn't evidence to support that. And so we look at the state's brief and we see a lot of talk about shouting. Rooney came over to Beiser and yelled at him to get off the trailer. That's at page 4. So I guess what I need to know, I guess you've suggested one thing, which is this other person and also just his use of the word said, which certainly competent evidence about what went on. That's his statement. To see if there's some dispute about the tone of the whole initial encounter.
We submit that there is, Your Honor. Again, we have Chris Sands saying what he heard was, quote, good-natured. But the record also shows that there were present in the immediate vicinity, although not on the trailer, as Mr. Sand was, there was present a man named Brad Wirtz, who was a member of Mitch Rooney's hunting party, and Mitch Rooney's son. And they both indicated they didn't hear this initial exchange, which would suggest to me that it could not have been very loud, as it was described. It suggests that whatever Rooney said, he wasn't yelling or shouting.
Because we're talking about a pretty confined space, some gas station or something, right?
Yeah, it's a gas station convenience store, and this all occurred in the parking lot. There were people coming and going, registering deer, buying gasoline, and so forth.
Okay.
Our concern, Your Honor, here is that there were three things that the district court pointed to in granting this motion for summary judgment. One was the one Your Honor identified, that in its view, Mitch Rooney made this loud and confrontational statement. Another was this brushing up against Mr. Beiser. And the third was Mr. Rooney using his hands to push Mr. Beiser's hands off of his person. Mr. Beiser had grabbed Mr. Rooney by the shirt, in fact, by the flesh of his stomach, and Mr. Rooney was trying to extricate himself from that. The district court pointed to these three things as saying, all right, this provided an arguable probable cause for Rooney's arrest for disorderly conduct. As we point out in the brief, our concern is you only get to that point if you accept uncritically the version of events that are told by Mr. Beiser.
So is it your position that brushing, whatever that means, is kind of as a matter of law by itself not enough of a physical contact? There are cases, of course, that talk about poking law enforcement officers, various other kinds of physical contact that a reasonable law enforcement officer wouldn't think if you had that physical contact that disorderly conduct was occurring.
I think that even the district court acknowledged that a mere accidental contact would not be sufficient to provide probable cause for an arrest.
And what are we going to do with this spitting the piece of hot dog? They say it's completely irrelevant. You mention it a few times. The district court mentions it.
Well,
that happens after the brushing?
I believe it did occur after the brushing. I think it's relevant to the extent that it shows the degree of animus on Mr. Beiser's part.
He just had really bad manners and ate with his mouth open.
That could very well be, Your Honor. Our concern is that, again, that the district court, reaching the conclusion it did, could only reach that conclusion if it performed the task of the fact finder by weighing competing inferences, deciding whose version was more credible, entitled to more weight than in other parties. And in doing so, it acted improperly in granting this summary judgment.
So let me turn you to the handcuffing, because there I think you've got a hard case. As far as I can tell from the record, Mr. Rooney never alerts the officer to the fact that the handcuffs are particularly painful or anything. And in cases where we have found excessive force because handcuffs are too tight, you know, we have looked at whether the plaintiff said something. Now, you know, it doesn't last too long anyway, because Peterson comes along and changes things around. But
it lasted for about 20 minutes, Your Honor. As we point out in our principal brief, as Mr. Beiser was applying the handcuffs to Mitch Rooney, Rooney complained that they, quote, really hurt. That as Beiser applied these handcuffs to Rooney, he grabbed Rooney by the back of the neck and jerked him back.
Well, that's different. I mean, that's not about the handcuffs. I'm a little worried about blending together the excessive force arguments that you've abandoned and the handcuffing incident.
Well, it's the excessive force claim that we abandoned is the one that occurred prior to the arrest. When we pled the case, we didn't parse the claim as the district court did. The district court separated out what happened before the arrest from the arrest from the handcuff issue. It's our contention that this grabbing his head and jerking his neck back is all part of the application of the handcuffs. And we believe there was similar conduct in the Payne versus Pauley case, that this court looked at as saying that there was excessive force in the application of the handcuffs in that case. And that's why we mentioned it in our brief in this respect.
But notwithstanding all of that, he doesn't ask for medical care when he gets to the station. He kind of goes right back to enjoying his hunting vacation. He doesn't seem terribly affected by it.
On this record, that's correct. There's evidence that over the subsequent years, he sought medical care from four different.
But there's no evidence that links the carpal tunnel to this incident. There's no expert medical affidavit or anything.
That's correct, Judge. But again, as we point out in our brief, I think there's ample authority from this circuit that you don't need medical proof to support a claim of this kind.
Well, if it's that obvious, but I'm saying maybe it's not that obvious. He had a job that could have caused carpal tunnel strain. He had different things that could have done it. And how should we assume, without any evidence in the record, that it's because of this 20 minutes in the handcuffs?
Well, I think looking at the Steinbeck case and the other cases that we've cited, if there's even a subjective complaint of pain at the beginning, and if there is a lack of a showing for the necessity of conduct that would cause such pain, that's enough to support this claim. The rest of it may go to the amount of damages to which he's entitled, but I think that's a consideration for the jury.
Mr. Snyder, this was a November 05 incident?
Correct, Judge.
And when was suit filed in state court?
Right before the statute of limitations would have expired on his 1983 claim, Judge.
But when was that?
That would have been
a six-year statute in Wisconsin.
2011. It is a six-year statute, Judge. So it would be 2011.
And an incident that isn't too terribly complex.
Correct, although the problem with his wrist, his injuries, was complex, as appears in the fact that he had to go to...
Was the late development of the carpal tunnel problem that caused the lawsuit to be filed late?
No, really the converse. I think he was hoping that the problems that he was experiencing would go away. When it finally became evident to him they weren't going to go away, that's when he wanted to move forward with the suit.
All right, want to save a few moments for rebuttal?
I do. Thank you, Judge.
Ms. Kekauer? Is that Hauer or Haber?
Haber. Kekauer.
We didn't get it right in our
information
sheet, so
I apologize.
It's pronounced
in any way. Okay. Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Wisconsin Assistant Attorney General Carla Kekauer, and I represent the defendant appellee Brad Beiser, who's a Wisconsin DNR conservation warden. Warden Beiser was just doing his job on November 19, 2005, when he arrested Mitch Rooney for disorderly conduct and handcuffed him.
But I would appreciate it if you would turn to the point about the first theory that's still in the case. That's really bothering me, and that is the translation or the transmogrification of the word said in the plaintiff's account into yelling that somehow other people who were standing around don't even hear, and that I don't see why taking the record in the light most favorable to Mr. Rooney, we have to assume that it's a conversational tone of voice, and that leaves us down to one fact, which is just brushing past a person. I'm not sure how that's even arguable probable cause for a disorderly conduct charge. It's, people brush past each other all the time. Now, of course, if you look at it the other way, even rude statements to police officers and other comparable people like game wardens are not enough to constitute disorderly conduct either. So I am very concerned about what this record is like and the fact that it looks to me like there are disputes on the tone.
Well, I think you have to look at the surrounding facts and circumstances. Rooney and Beiser had just had a tense conversation inside the gas station, and Beiser came outside to do his job. He was talking to Chris Sands, and he was checking the tags of the deer on the trailer when Rooney came up to him and gave him a command to get off the trailer and let me through.
Well, wait, why do I have to look at the fact? Why do I have to resolve the facts in the light favorable to your client?
Well, I think those facts are undisputed.
Well, I'm looking at the district judge's opinion. Defendant went into the station and attempted to initiate a conversation with plaintiff. And then when plaintiff didn't respond, defendant stated loudly, Mitch Rooney doesn't like the DNR. Plaintiff says he didn't respond. So silence at that point from the plaintiff. That's not disorderly conduct.
Sure.
Silence, even if somebody says something very loud at you. And so then they walk out. Then, you know, Beiser walks out, sees Sand registering the deer, chats with Sand. Plaintiff comes out, and defendant doesn't say anything. Then there's this brushing, and then there's this dispute about what's said. So I just don't, I can't find a fact in the record conceded on the plaintiff's side that this is done in a rude way.
I think, first of all, I think that plaintiff didn't cite any facts to contradict the defendant's proposed finding of fact.
He cites his own affidavit. He says, I said. His affidavit is perfectly competent evidence.
But the defendant's proposed finding of fact specifically said that the statement was made in a loud tone of voice, and he didn't say he didn't contradict the loud tone of voice.
But doesn't
portion.
He say, I said?
He said, I said, but he didn't say, I said in a normal tone of voice. He said, I said.
But the district court, where in the district court's opinion can you point me to a statement where the district judge says, I'm going to rely on the summary judgment exchanges to resolve this dispute of facts?
Well, the district court says that the judge is going to look at the summary judgment rules, and that the
where are you looking at?
This is page 7.
Although plaintiff says in his brief that he did not admit to yelling, he doesn't cite any evidence in his brief of proposing finding of fact. I think he does, though. And then she says, I'll assume that the plaintiff's actions didn't give probable cause, but she's got the arguable probable cause.
I would submit, though, that even if Rooney had made that statement in a completely normal tone of voice, if he made that statement in a normal tone of voice and immediately after that brushed past Beiser, making physical contact, that would give Beiser arguable probable cause to arrest him.
Do you think the police can arrest in downtown Chicago, the police can arrest every single person who physically brushes by them? That is an astounding proposition.
I think given the circumstances, I wouldn't speculate about every time, but I think in the circumstances of this case, where they had just had a tense conversation in the gas station,
you're characterizing it as tense, but I didn't see that.
Under either version of the facts,
I don't see that in the district court's undisputed facts, page 3 of the district court's opinion. She doesn't say anything about it being a tense exchange.
I don't know that she characterizes it as a tense conversation.
She doesn't. She just says that Beiser says something and plaintiff doesn't respond.
She describes
plaintiff
both versions of the facts, and I think under both versions it's a tense conversation.
No, I mean, she doesn't actually hear that she's saying defendant said this, defendant said that. Defendant is Beiser. Defendant went into the station and attempted to initiate a conversation. Defendant says he congratulated. Plaintiff says he began by asking, how many deers did you catch? Then defendant says something loud, and plaintiff says he doesn't respond. She doesn't indicate any dispute over that much. And so, you know, maybe you just think there's a rule that the police can arrest anyone for disorderly conduct that's irritating them, but I don't think that's the law.
Well, I don't think that's the law either. But I think in this circumstance, there was a charged situation, and that when Rooney
Where do you see that?
I think that Beiser was outside doing his job. He was trying to check the tags of the deer on the trailer. Rooney came up to him, made this statement, Brad, get off the trailer and let me through. And then he brushed between the trailer and Beiser and made physical contact. At that point, I think Beiser had arguable probable cause to arrest him.
For disorderly conduct, that is a very broad theory of the Wisconsin statute.
You know, I think Beiser may have been mistaken. He may have been mistaken. He may have misread the situation. Maybe the situation in the gas station wasn't
wasn't. But we don't have
so
very many. All I'm doing is looking at the district, what the district court accepts, which you have not challenged, about what went on inside the gas station is the prelude to this. And whether this was said in a loud tone of voice or whether it was not said in a loud tone of voice, we have a sentence spoken, which is not enough for disorderly conduct, and we have a brushing between the defendant and the trailer. And, wow, that, I mean, even for arguable probable cause, that strikes me as really weak. It strikes me as kind of a police state sort of theory of disorderly conduct.
Well, and then that certainly wasn't the only thing that Beiser was confronted with that day. I mean, Rooney then repeatedly tried to push away from Beiser and tried to break free and told Beiser to keep his hands off of him.
But if the police officer hasn't been entitled to grab the person in the first place, is it your theory that you just have to let people grab you?
Well, I think when Rooney was the first one to make verbal and physical contact outside the gas station.
No, answer my question. Suppose Rooney hadn't done anything. Would Beiser have been entitled to grab him, and would Rooney have been entitled to try to push him off?
Probably not, no.
Okay.
But I think in this situation, Rooney was the first one to make verbal and physical contact. And in that situation, a reasonable officer in Beiser's position would have felt threatened and would have tried to subdue the person. And under those circumstances, even if Beiser was mistaken in his assessment, and even if Rooney had brushed past him by mistake, or Rooney was just trying to defend himself.
Or he's just too fat to get by, you know, or something, without a little bit of a brush. I mean, sometimes people are in small
spaces. But there,
spaces.
I think, the statement before that.
Maybe he's very thin. I don't know.
Brad, get off the trailer and let me through. I think that statement, coupled with the brushing, is more provocative than simply trying to get through.
Okay.
So under those circumstances, I think a reason...
The fact that they have a prior history, how does that cut at all in the conduct of either Mr. Rooney or Mr. Beiser?
Well, I think it cuts in favor of Warden Beiser. You know, he knew that they had this history, and he knew that there could potentially be some kind of confrontation. You know, he still is obligated to do his job and check the tags of the deer on the trailer. It may have been in his mind when he's out there. It may have, when Rooney made the statement and then brushed past him making physical contact, it may have played into his decision to try to subdue Rooney. It may have been part of his decision making, and therefore giving him arguable probable cause to make an arrest. Moving on to the excessive force claim. Warden Beiser used appropriate and reasonable force in handcuffing Rooney after their confrontation because Beiser applied the handcuffs correctly and consistent with police practice. Rooney did not sufficiently notify Beiser or anyone else that the handcuffs were painful or causing him injury. Rooney didn't seek immediate medical care for his injuries, and Rooney didn't suffer any lasting injury from the time that he spent in handcuffs. Looking at that first fact, the defendant's use of force.
What about the
expert
pulling back? I mean, I think you've explained a lot of those things in your brief, but there's an allegation that he sort of, his head is jerked back or something as the visor's getting his hands behind him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that goes to the claim that's been dismissed, the claim of the excessive force prior to the handcuffing, and that claim has been dismissed, so it's not properly before the court. Even if it were part of the handcuffing, Mr. Rooney doesn't claim any injury with regard to the neck pulling. His only claim of injury is to his wrist. So I think we're really just focusing on the tightness of the handcuffs, and that's the only claim that's before the court. So the handcuffs were double-locked behind Rooney's back. According to trained technique, for tactical and safety reasons, that double-locking ensures that the handcuffs don't continue to tighten. So there's really no dispute that the handcuffs were applied properly. Rooney admits that Sergeant Peterson checked the handcuffs and that he concluded that the handcuffs were applied properly and that they weren't too tight. Second, there's no evidence that Rooney sufficiently notified Beiser or anyone else that he was experiencing pain or injury.
But Peterson does change the hand. I mean, he complains to Peterson at least.
He complains to Peterson, that's correct. But Peterson only changed out the handcuffs. He actually said the handcuffs looked not too tight and that the injuries didn't look serious. He just changed out the handcuffs because he wanted to have his own handcuffs back and to have Beiser have his handcuffs back. And Peterson had a belly chain, so he could safely handcuff Rooney in front, whereas Beiser and all game wardens aren't equipped with belly chains, so he couldn't safely handcuff Rooney in front. Rooney did not seek immediate medical care for his injuries. He didn't seek medical care from Sergeant Peterson. He didn't seek medical care at the jail. He didn't seek medical care in the days and weeks following the incident. Instead, he just continued on with his hunting trip, and he participated in butchering activities, and he didn't take medication, according to his friend Brad Wirtz, and he didn't complain about pain or injury. And finally, Rooney didn't suffer any lasting injury from the short time that he spent in handcuffs. According to the defendant's medical expert, who's a hand surgeon, John Bax, Rooney's carpal tunnel syndrome wasn't caused from the time that he spent in handcuffs. Instead, it was caused from his lifelong career as a metal fabricator and welder. So that leaves Rooney with just minor injuries, which he describes as blood blisters and bruising and swelling. And under the relevant case law, those types of injuries just aren't sufficient to create an excessive force Fourth Amendment claim. So to conclude, Warden Beiser had arguable probable cause to arrest Rooney for disorderly conduct because Rooney gave Beiser a loud verbal command to get off the trailer and let me through. And then immediately after that, he brushed past Beiser, making physical contact. And then he proceeded to push away from Beiser when Beiser tried to subdue him. So under these facts and circumstances, the district court properly concluded that Beiser had arguable probable cause to arrest Rooney for disorderly conduct. Beiser also used appropriate and reasonable force in handcuffing Rooney because he applied the handcuffs correctly. Rooney didn't sufficiently complain about pain or injury. Rooney didn't try to seek medical care immediately after the incident. And Rooney didn't suffer any lasting injury from the short time he spent in handcuffs. So under these circumstances, the amount of force that Beiser used in handcuffing Rooney was reasonable and in accordance with Fourth Amendment standards.
Does the record indicate what disposition was made in the state court on the disorderly conduct charge?
It was dismissed. Thank you.
Mr. Schneider?
First of all, with respect to this, the question about the history between these two men, I think there was no history between the two of them personally. There is testimony that the exchange inside the gas station involved Mr. Beiser making this loud announcement to all present. Mitch doesn't like the DNR, which I think refers to some prior problems Mr. Rooney had had with the DNR, but not with
the constant rubbing between the hunter and the warden.
Right. That's a fair characterization, Your Honor. With respect to the handcuff issue, among the authorities that Mr. Beiser cites in his brief is the Graham case, and it talks about the reasonableness of force and how one goes about making a determination as to whether the force applied was reasonable. It talks about the necessity for determining the severity of the offense for which the person is being arrested, the extent to which that person is resisting, the extent to which that person may be attempting to flee. The first observation about all of those is that these all seem to be very fact-specific inquiries. And with most inquiries on reasonableness, we're talking about a jury issue. Second observation is that if you tick through those factors indicated in Graham, we have a person who's being arrested, putting aside the probable cause question, for a minor offense, a disorderly conduct. The testimony indicated that when Mr. Beiser told Mr. Rooney he was under arrest, Mr. Rooney put into his pockets the papers he'd been holding in his hands, turned around, put his hands behind his back so that he could be handcuffed. He wasn't resisting. There's no suggestion here that he was attempting to run away. Applying those Graham factors to the situation with respect to these handcuffs, we submit that there is at least a jury issue as to whether or not the way in which they were applied was excessive. And we believe that was an issue that should have been resolved by the jury, not resolved by the district court. We think summary judgment, both on the merits of these claims and on the qualified immunity claim, was inappropriate. Summary judgment ought to be reversed.
What's the county? Pardon me. What's the county where the trial would occur, assuming there was one?
In the state charge?
Yes.
That was Douglas County, is where the disorderly conduct was brought.
Where would the jurisdiction be for your lawsuit?
Well, this comes from the Western District. I'm assuming that the trial was set for Madison.
So you're hoping for 12 hunters instead of...
Which we stood a lot better chance of getting if this thing had stayed in Douglas County where we started it. But
it was removed.
Yeah.
I just want to take a moment more on the history. To the extent the record reflects this, Mr. Snyder, they knew each other. And wasn't there a prior DNR contact with the son of Mr. Rooney?
That was several years before this, Your Honor.
So my inquiry is Mr. Beiser, other than knowledgeable of that, or was he involved in that earlier DNR matter?
I think
that record just not tell us? I'm not asking you to go outside the record.
Well, I think the record does show there were a couple of things. There was one incident involving Mr. Rooney and his son and a different set of wardens in a different location. And then sometime after that, there was some contact between Warden Beiser and one of Mr. Rooney's sons. I think it's fair to say Mr. Beiser knew of Mitch Rooney before they encountered each other.
I think that's pretty clear, that they're aware of each other's existence. I'm just trying to the extent we can, and appropriately so, look at the potential factors going into a probable cause, whether taken, again, as my colleague Judge Wood has said, we've got to take the facts most favorable to the plaintiff here, whether or not Mr. Beiser had anything to build on with regard to the brushing and what was or was not said. That's the only inquiry I'm making.
I think there's nothing in the record to suggest that these two men had ever had any personal contact before this.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keck-Havler. Case is taken under advisement.